Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Ayo, welcome in. It's the second half of Sports Talk. I'm Jeff Nowak, filling in for Steve Geller tonight up till 8 p.m. You can catch us on WWLAMFM.com and always free on the Odyssey app. You know, I'm sure we've been talking the whole first half of the show about LSU baseball. How could you not? I still can't stop talking about it. The game was remarkable in that it was an entire game before the game that went nuts, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was a great game from the jump.
Like you're saying, and this is exactly what I think you're trying to say.
The first seven innings of that game were fantastic, verbatim. And then the final two innings of that game were madness.
The amount of feelings and emotion I had from innings 1 through 8 were enough for, like, you know, to go to bed and be like, that was a game. And then just the final, you know, two innings.
Yeah.
That was like a week of games.
Yeah, and you know, Landon Beidelschies, a guy who I still can't spell his name, but he was fantastic.
I was copying and pasting it the whole night.
Yeah, I mean, I heard them say it on the broadcast like 5 different times. I'm like, how? I don't even know where to begin spelling that. I just kind of jumbled a bunch of letters into Google and they like correct me, because I mean, he was filthy. They got to him in the end, but I mean, he's not the guy who's going to go home sad after that game. Like he's going to feel like, man, I just made myself a draft pick. You know, any lefty who can pitch like that is going to be a pro. It's almost inevitable. And Zach Cowan, like, it's easy to forget, like, but we're only going to talk about the final two innings, but like Zach Cowan made that a game, right? I mean, his last time out, he went an inning and a third against Little Rock, let up 5 runs in a very similar situation. That was the closeout game. But, you know, like he couldn't have been going into that game feeling good about his stuff. And he was just, he dominated.
I'll say this, though. The last couple of times he's played Arkansas, he's been great.
Yeah, I mean,
so
familiarity.
In that kind of situation, you take it one game at a time, one opponent at a time. Maybe he was feeling, obviously he played well, so maybe he was feeling
well. I would say,
though,
familiarity helps the batter a lot more than it helps the pitcher. Right?
Benefit of the doubt goes there.
Mystery helps a pitcher. Mystery doesn't help a batter. The more you get to see a pitcher, you should be better. So, you know, he was dominant. But, you know, the end of that game is where it all wasn't, you know, some of those Arkansas players, like, you feel for them. That's the thing about college sports that, you know, I gravitate more toward pro sports because you can be a lot more critical of professional athletes when they make mistakes like that. Mm-hmm. When you see a kid like Davalan, am I saying his name right?
Davalan.
Like, I mean, your heart breaks for him. Like, it's tragic to watch.
They talked about it on the broadcast. That is like one of the toughest plays to make in any sport.
Yeah, well, I mean, and he was an All-American player, or like a second-team All-American. He's a great left fielder, right? The shortstop, Aloy, is a great shortstop.
Yes.
They just made two of the worst plays in quick succession that you will ever see, and it just happened to be in the biggest moment of their season. It reminded me, if you go back to 2016, which feels like a lifetime ago at this point, but there was a game, LSU-Arkansas. LSU was down like 9-4 in like the seventh inning. And then, wouldn't you know it, a little possum runs out onto the field and everyone goes nuts. It delayed the game for like a half an hour. And then the rest of that season, everyone was wearing like possum gear and it became the rally possum. And it was the theme of that season was a rally possum. I even got my wife a rally possum shirt. She still has it. And it's like, it was such like a microcosm of how weird a college baseball season can get, because a wild animal runs out on the field and that's the only thing that it becomes the symbol of that season. Well, that it felt like that game, you know, and it's probably not a great comparison to make, because 2016, if you recall, was the year that LSU went to the hosted a super regional against, wouldn't you know it, Coastal Carolina. Didn't go their way. Kramer Robertson is still looking for revenge on that game. And then Coastal goes to the College World Series, gets to the title series, and who would they meet but Arizona, coached by, you guessed it, Jay Johnson, we were talking about this 2 weeks ago, me and Charlie, and it was like, man, if this series happens, it's going to be like double revenge.
Oh, it's like a, Mike said movie script earlier for the game last night.
It's fantastic.
The storylines, the narratives leading into the weekend series that's ahead of us right now, if this was happening in the NBA, you would absolutely believe that Adam Silver is somehow pulling the strings. Like, this is insane.
There was a script writer going on. But yeah, I mean, we'll get into a lot of that. This is going to be a lot of LSU talk in this show, but we will also talk about Game 6 of the NBA Finals coming up tonight, Pacers, Thunder in Indiana. We're going to bring on Will Guillory, NBA writer for The Athletic at 6:25. We'll also talk about the Pelicans trading up. I guess you could say trading up, trading for an extra pick in the draft with the Pacers, who sent their 2025 pick in exchange for the 2026 pick that the Pelicans got in the trade of Brandon Ingram to the Raptors. So we'll talk more about that. I think it's all ammunition to move up. I'm curious what Will thinks. And then in the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to chat with Steven Bidek, sports correspondent for the Omaha World Herald. He's out in Omaha stringing for the Sun News in Myrtle Beach, who cover Coastal Carolina. So he's been really kind of taking a close look at Coastal Carolina's run through Omaha, through the College World Series. Really intrigued to hear what he has to say. But Cullen, the real story is LSU once again running away with the shot crown at Rocco's. I mean,
I got so lost in the game last night. I kid you not. I'm doing the game. I'm here in the studio. And I want to say the post game is ending. I want to say post game ended right at 10. It was like 9:55, and I pull up Twitter, and I'm like, oh, man, 5 minutes, and we got the Rocco's update. And I go to bed, and I completely forget to check. Before the game, they were at what, like 20,000?
Something like that, yeah.
What are they at now?
25,061. Yeah. The next closest is Arkansas, who put down an admirable 8,713.
So no one else has broken 10K.
Not even close, and they won't. The next closest after that, Murray State, which you got to give it up for Murray State.
You got it.
Because that is not a big fan base, and they put down 8,000 of these things. There's a humanitarian element to this. Every schools or local area's food bank is getting a portion of the money, which, you know, that's how you can justify it. Coastal Carolina is in there, 6,711, but Rocco's must be Rocco's must be the biggest LSU fans that do not live in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Because anytime LSU shows up at this thing, they'll triple the total by themselves. Now, I don't think they're going to set the record, which is they set last time.
Oh, no.
They're still about 43,000 off the pace, although last time they had like a ton bought on the final day. So there's still a chance.
You also, I think, played a lot more. You kind of dragged things out.
Yeah, sure.
Here's a question for you. 25K right now. Had they had to play tonight, would it have broken 35?
No. I mean, it's tough to say. These are not cheap shots at $5. I don't know. But it's always funny to watch this because I feel like these schools show up and they're like, we're going to give them a run for their money. And then they get out there for a week and they're like, oh, this is embarrassing. Like UCLA shows up and they're up to 1,400. It's like, why bother UCLA?
Yeah, I was saying, who's in dead
like a
last?
Drop them? In the bucket. Yeah, Oregon State. But I mean, Oregon State was out quick. 1964, Arizona 1761, Louisville 2012. So LSU showing up to Rocco's as they always do.
I will say, I do feel like you're right that it's kind of most of the country might make the argument that this is kind of like a big bad, the villain. We might be the villain, so to speak. I know that odds makers already have the Tigers as a favorite heading into the game.
As they should be.
Everyone's going to be rooting for Coastal Carolina. Some people down here might. People in Omaha won't. People will be rooting for us. And that's good.
Why do you say that?
Why do I say what, though? People in Omaha are going to be rooting for us, or people around the world might be rooting for
Coastal?
Why
would Omahans? I think Omahans would be the way to go. But why would you say Omahans want LSU to win? Like, they're already there. They're buying stuff either way.
Well, yeah, but that's why.
I think they would be rooting for LSU to get to the finals to title series. But once they're there, I think you kind of root for the underdog.
I think they like us. It's a home away from home.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. They do hang out there a lot. There was a gigantic tiger roaming around, so that helped.
I did hear about that.
I just feel like LSU fans put more into this than any other fan base. And that's not to say there aren't other really...
Which is why I'm going to say it's reciprocated.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it is. I'm just saying, like, I feel like there's a lot of really great fan bases out there. I just don't think anyone turns a trip to the College World Series into the type of spectacle that LSU does. I just don't think that they can. I don't think that they're physically capable.
We can ask our man on the ground.
LSU baseball such a fantastic experience. And yeah, I'm sure Stephen has seen this and will see this. We're going to talk to him in the 7 o'clock hour. But yeah, I mean, how are you feeling? Do you think they're going to win this series? I kind of feel like it's destined at this point.
Are you, absolutely. I mean, you're going into this in arguably there's been talks about whether this team is better or worse than the 2023 team.
It's not better.
It's not better. But I ironically think
you had the first two picks in the draft.
I think you're in a better position. You have your two top guys. You have Anderson and Ianson heading into that game. You burned nobody.
Yeah.
I can't remember how many days rest. I guess because you didn't have to play another winner-take-all game tonight.
Yeah.
I'd have to look back the exact number of days. I'm assuming you're going to have an extra day of rest if it shook out the way I think it is. Because I'm pretty sure 2 years ago it was also a Saturday, Sunday, Monday series. So you'd have Thursday and Friday off to recoup and then Saturday's game one. I think they take it. The question is though, are we waking up Monday morning going into game three or not?
Well, I mean, Coastal hasn't lost in like 2 months at this point, so they probably feel pretty confident about themselves. But yeah, both teams have their pitching staffs set up as well as you could hope. Neither team lost a game in the regional, which is I don't know. Do you call it the regional? It's a regional format.
I call it like a super regional.
Yeah, a super duper regional. Neither team lost a game. At Coastal probably felt really good about themselves because they thought LSU was going to have to go out just like we all did and throw Cade Anderson in a winner take all game tonight. And they, you know, obviously LSU made sure they didn't have to do that. So now Cade Anderson can go out on Saturday and you get the legit ace in that game. That's what you want. That's what the College World Series is about. I want to see aces, you know, like Paul Skenes didn't get to do that, right? Like you didn't see Paul Skenes.
Yeah. You saw him at the tail end of that third game, kind of stretching out in the dugout when we had like a 10-2 lead. You were like, you know what? Yeah. Pour it on. Get him out there. Why not? Make him throw 30.
Yeah. But I know it's exciting. It's fun. What else is exciting? You know, game six of the NBA Finals. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. We're going to bring on Will Guillory of The Athletic to break it down. Pacers Thunder. Let us know who you think is going to take it on the Oakenheart Jewelers Talk and Text Line 504-260-1870. I'm Jeff Nowak, Cullen Steele, taking you up till 8 p.m. Keep it locked on.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
WWL. Rolling back in on WWL. Jeff Nowak, Cullen Steele, taking you up till 8 p.m. here on Sports Talk. We're getting ready for Game 6 of the NBA Finals. We're going to bring in Will Guillory, NBA writer for The Athletic. How you doing, Will? You excited for the game tonight?
I'm doing well, man. I'm looking forward to it for sure. I think, you know, it seems like all signs are pointing to the Thunder winning the title tonight, but we know the Pacers, man, they never give up. So I think it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, you know, I kind of feel like Game 6 in the NBA Finals, we were talking about this last hour, like if you were ever going to have a crowd that you could feed on from an energy perspective, I don't think it gets any hotter than that. Like I go back to when the Pelicans were hosting the Blazers a couple years back. It feels like a lifetime ago, and that's sweet. But like they came back for Game 3, and it just, you could tell the crowd was hyping that team up to a level that like they weren't getting beat that night. Even the series against the Warriors, that Game 3, you know, like they won that game in large part because the energy they drew from the crowd. So I don't know. I kind of feel like the Pacers are a team, if Nesmith can shoot, if Nembhard can shoot, if Benedict Mathurin has a game, like they can make up for Halliburton probably not being, what, 60%? He's going to go, but at what level? I don't know. I kind of like the Pacers in this one.
And I think you're exactly right in that. I think everybody in the building realizes that they got to do a little bit more, knowing that Halliburton's not 100%, right? I think that goes for the crowd, you know, all the guys you mentioned, Miles Turner, Pascal Siakam, Nembhard. I'm sure Mathurin's going to come out aggressive. Everybody's got to turn it up because they got to lift up Halliburton. And I think that's going to be the mindset for everybody in Indiana tonight. But I think, you know, what makes this Thunder team so impressive is that we've seen them in so many situations where their back has been against the wall during this playoffs. And we've just been waiting for them to kind of back down or look like a young team, look unprepared for the moment. And over again, they figured out a way to answer it. They've gotten Jalen Williams or Shai Gilgeous or one of these guys to step up. And I think, you know, that's what's made this run so impressive for that team. And I think it's going to be another huge test for them tonight to get this thing done. Because, you know, once it comes down to game seven, anything can happen, right? So I think the best thing for OKC to do is finish this thing off tonight and not even allow it to go there.
You know, Jalen Williams is a guy that I kind of he not to just compare him to a Jalen, but he kind of reminded me of Jaylen Brown with Jason Tatum. And, like, you kind of forget about him. Right, he's there. He's an elite scorer, but when he's there next to Shai, he's the Robin, right? Like, you never think of him as the star, but then he goes out and drops 40, and you're like, wait, he can do that? You know, where do you kind of land on Jalen in terms of, like, where would you rank him in terms of the NBA's elite players? Because it feels like you could compare them pretty closely to being a younger version of Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, I had Jalen Williams all NBA on my, you know, awards ballot this year. You know, he's an incredible player. You know, both ends of the court, you know, I had him all defense second team as well. So he's a guy who contributes in so many different ways. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, I think Jalen Williams has kind of been a shining example of what this Thunder run has been. Because, you know, it's not that long ago we were watching that Denver series and we were saying, man, Jalen Williams, where is he? Like, can they even get 20 from this guy? And that series just seemed like every single possession with Shai Gilgeous, and he was carrying so much. And I think we've seen throughout this playoffs him learn, him grow, his confidence lift. I mean, the thought of him scoring 40 points in a game was like, no way. People in the first two series, just because he was so quiet on so nice, and then seeing the level of aggression he played with in game five with the season on the line, it's just another example of how much this Thunder team has just evolved throughout this playoff run. And it's what's been so special about what they've done. They've grown, they've matured. They were dominant during the regular season, and they're a better team now than they were during the regular season. It's just extremely impressive what they've done and what they've been able to put together. And knowing now that Jalen Williams is this, I mean, the sky's the limit. Because if they would have lost in that second round series against Denver, I think a lot of the talk would have been, do you get rid of Jalen Williams, right? Is it time to move on from him and get a veteran in there who can help Shai? But now that he's proven he can be this guy, who knows, you know, what OKC can do with his squad now.
Yeah, I mean, another reason to compare him to the Boston guys, because everyone kept talking about, oh, do you need to break those guys up? Can they win together? Yep. Then they did, and now no one really talks about it. Well, they talk about it now because Jason Tatum's hurt. I have kind of a theoretical question for you that I'm kind of fascinated by. This Thunder team versus the other Thunder team that got to the finals, the one with Durant, Harden, Ibaka, you know, Westbrook, those two teams in a seven-game series, who wins?
Oh, man, that's a tough one because, you know, that version of Kevin Durant was so special.
Elite, yeah.
and then seeing that version of KD versus, you know, Lou Dort and Caruso would have been something. But I think this version of the Thunder team, I think what makes them great is that they're just so deep, and they can easily, you know, have 7-8 guys make an impact. And that old Thunder team, the top five guys were elite, but then, you know, once they started dipping into that bench, it got a little rough. So I think I would roll with this team. And just like I said, at the end of the day, we've seen this team respond so many times. And I think we saw it a little bit with that Thunder team, but I don't think we've seen it as much as we have with this group.
Yeah, and if anything, that Thunder team with Durant and Westbrook and Ibaka and Harden, and like that team is the case study of you better win when you get there, because no matter how good your future looks, you may never get back, right? Like you got to take advantage of those opportunities, because I think there's that picture floating around of all those guys walking on the court together, and it's like you would have guessed at that time, like, yeah, they lost to LeBron, but they'll be back. They never even got close to coming back.
Oh, yeah, you don't even have to look that far back. Just think this time last year, we were looking at Boston like, oh, man, Tatum and Brown, they finally got one. How many more can they get? You know, they finally got the monkey off their back. Now they can start reeling off a dynasty here. And now Tatum's hurt. They're breaking up that group this summer. And who knows when Boston's going to be able to get back. So you're 100% right. Once you have a chance, you got to take advantage. And the Thunder have got made it happen. And now, I mean, looking at how young that roster is, you can't help but feel like they're going to be back here. But who knows, man, with how crazy the Western Conference is, you know, the injuries in the NBA, being able to get it done with these guys is going to be a huge achievement for this team.
No doubt. And, you know, switching over to the Pelicans a little bit, obviously they pulled off a trade this week. They picked up the number 23 pick in the draft from the Pacers, you know, a mid-finals trade. You don't see that very often. And they sent the 2026 pick they got from the Raptors in the Brandon Ingram trade over. What are your thoughts on that trade? Do you think it's more about ammunition than maybe looking for two young players, or do you think they're going to sit and make both those picks?
Yeah, right now, if I had to make a bet, I would say I think they're going to end up making both picks, but I do think they're going to be making some calls, seeing if there's any potential for them to move up, or if they can kind of, if there are any other guys out there who may be interested and they can go after. But I think that's the most interesting part about what they've done, just the how they kind of are very flexible now with having these two picks in their pocket, where they can go in any direction. They can kind of they can be a risk. They can be more risky with the first pick. They can be more risk adverse and be more risky with the second pick. They can trade the second pick, keep the first pick, whatever. But I think the big thing now is Joe Dumars being able to really show what he wants this team to look like and really start building that foundation out. And we saw that year one with David Griffin, right? He did that first 2019 draft when he drafted Zion Williamson, Jackson Hayes, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker all in his first draft. And I think now we're going to see Joe Dumars have a similar opportunity to really show what type of team he wants to build, what type of players he wants to really, you know, showcase and say, hey, these are my guys. And I think that's a really important way for him to start this thing out. And I think it's big for him also to start building out the depth of this team, why it's going to be important to hit on these picks, because we know what they have in Zion and Trey Murphy and Herb and those guys, but I think there are going to be some real questions about that bench now that they've kind of lost some of that depth over the past couple of years. So seeing him build that out with these picks is going to be really important.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think Dumars is going to prioritize in this offseason, right? Like, where do you think this team is going to plan to kind of build up? Because it's been a deep team. Like, you've never looked at this team and said they don't have players to come off the bench. The health has been an issue, but it's like you only can field put so many players on the court at a time, right? You got to have the stars, and I don't know. Like, I wonder if they have the horses right now to kind of go with the role players.
Yeah, and I think you kind of alluded to the day. I think they want to bring in guys who are reliable, guys who you know what you're getting from them on a nightly basis, who kind of take that professional approach. I think that's what Dumars is really emphasizing coming in. He wants to really establish that culture, that accountability within the building, where guys know what to expect from each other on a nightly basis. And I think that's been the most frustrating thing about this Pelicans team, is that you see the talent, you see the potential, but any given night you show up to the Smoothie King Center and you don't know who's playing, what style of player, you know, what are they emphasizing that night? Who knows? Because there's so much changing from night to night with this team because of the injuries. And I think what Dumars wants to do is really establish, hey, this is who we are, these are the guys we're playing. And I think there are a few options there at seven. That's why I like where they are at seven. You don't really have to force anything there. You don't have to, you can just allow the draft to play out and see where it lands. But I think, you know, having two picks now really allows you to lean even more into what you want to be.
So who are some of the players that you think would be a fit, whether they stay at seven or even maybe move up if they try to move up and get aggressive?
Yeah, I think the two names I really circled from the beginning are Con Knipple, the two-guard from Duke, a really talented guy, can shoot the ball, can make some plays off the dribble, got good size, obviously, you know, was on the most talented team in college basketball last year, played an important role. And also Jeremiah Fears, I think more of a developmental guy. I'm not looking at him to be a real impact in year one, but he's a guy who can be that lead guard, be a guy who can make plays in pick and roll, getting downhill, something the Pels have been looking for, right? They wanted to make that happen with DeJounte Murray, and he got hurt last year. So now I think bringing in Jeremiah Fears will give you an opportunity to really have an answer there, you know, going into the future. But I think a wild card is also Kamal Mallowash, the big man from Duke. who a lot of people are, you know, polarized on. But I think he's a guy who can really, you take him at seven and you can say, hey, we're building the defensive identity. We want to be big. We want to protect the rim. We want to have big guys who can protect Zion Williamson, allow him to play that point Zion role. That would be a real interesting one. But I lean more towards the Knipple, Fears, those two guys, whichever one ends up falling to you at seven.
So my only issue with Fears, my only fear with Fears is I look at him and I see Kyra Lewis. Like, I see a very, very similar player. And that, I guess that's not fair because Kyra, you know, there's a lot of reasons they liked Kyra coming out. Both super young guys can get to the rim in a flash. I don't know if just Kyra never really developed at the NBA level. What do you not see them as similar players, or what do you see in Fears that makes you like him so much?
I think there's a similar fear whenever you draft these smaller guards, right? Because those guys are either really good or you're a bench player, right? There's no real in-between, because if you're not really a top-notch guy as a smaller 6'3", 6'2 guard, then you're going to get targeted a lot of times in these playoff series. We've seen that over and over again. And I think the thing with Fears, I would say I think he just got a little bit more feel at the point guard position, where Kyra Lewis was just a pure athlete. It was more speed, more transition. I think you see Fears in these pick-and-roll situations really understanding, you know, space, understanding how to use the role man, how to read the corner help. I think he just sees the floor a little bit better than Kyra Lewis. The big thing with Fears is, like, can you trust his jumper? How much of a threat will he be playing off the ball? Obviously, he's going to be on a team with Zion Williamson, so you got to be a threat off the ball if you're going to be on the court. But I really like Fears and what he can be. But I think the real question is, what is he going to look like playing on a team with Zion Williamson, with Trey Murphy, where he's asked to play off the ball a little bit more, how effective he'll be?
Yeah, so I guess the Kyra Lewis would be the I'm afraid of this pick comp. The I want to make this pick comp is probably De'Aaron Fox. Would you say that would be a similar player to what you'd be getting in Fears?
Yeah, I think that's a really good one. I like De'Aaron Fox. You know, going old school, I've seen some people compare him to Monte Ellis.
Okay.
Just one of those guards who can get into the paint, score 20 on any given night. And I think in today's NBA, you want guys who can create those three-point shots for others. That's what makes Zion so dynamic, right? Not just him scoring in the paint, but the fact that he can create threes for others. And when you watch Fears, when he's playing well, he just lives in the paint. And that's something that can just create so much offense for you, especially when you got a lob threat like Eve Nisi as well. So I think that's just the real thing for the Pels. They really want to find that guy at the point guard position, and it's not looking like it's working out all that well with DeJounte Murray. And who knows when you'll have an opportunity to get back into the top 10 and have a guy like Jeremiah Fears sitting there.
Yeah, and so, you know, I guess this will be my last question, and I'll let you run. I feel like halfway through the season, we were all looking at it saying, hey, the Pelicans can be the Grizzlies of this year and last year, right? Like, the Grizzlies kind of had all these injuries. They fell to the bottom, and then they immediately kind of bounced back when they, you know, got all these players back, and they had these young players who developed. And, you know, obviously the Desmond Bain trade and whatever. But, you know, what's your outlook for the Pelicans this upcoming season? Do you still feel like they can be that team, or have things changed to the point that it's hard, it's not really kind of that straight line back anymore? Because I do feel like with changing GMs and the way that season ended, it feels a lot different than it did midway through the season.
Yeah, it feels like the floor is a lot lower for this team, right? Like you mentioned before, in years past, they had so much depth. Like even when Zion was hurt, you saw the teams. They had Najee Marshall coming off the bench. They had Larry Nance. They had Dyson Daniels. They had Trey Murphy coming off the bench at that time. Like, they were so deep that you saw Zion and say, hey, if Zion's healthy, if B.I. is healthy, they could be a potential contender in the West. But if not, you could still see them being around 40, 45 wins if, you know, stuff works in their favor. Now, I think the pressure on Zion is higher than ever, because if he's not there, you really see a chasm of what's left to really pick up the rest of the team. And I think, obviously, we see Trey Murphy make a jump last year. I think he can prove to be a consistent 20-point scorer But I don't know if he can do what like B.I. did during that year where they played Phoenix in the first round, carrying the team without Zion Williamson. I think that's a lot to put on his shoulders, especially, like I said, when you don't have Larry Nance, when you don't have Najee Marshall, when you don't have these other guys supporting him. I think they do have some decent pieces coming off the bench. But we saw Jordan Hawkins kind of fall off last year, so he's got to respond. They're going to have a rookie coming in with that number 7 and potentially number 23 pick. Where do those guys factor in? They got Carlo Mackovich coming off of his rookie year last year. They're going to get him involved, but, you know, what does he look like now? So I think there are a lot of questions now with this bench, which means they need Zion Williamson to be healthy more than ever. And I think when you have Zion, Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, Eve Misi out there, I think that's a four you feel really good about, right? They're athletic. They can make plays on defense. Zion was dynamic last year. But how good are they going to be in the West? I think that's still a lot to be seen, just because there's so much still up in the air in the West with the Kevin Durant situation. Where does Giannis end up falling? What do the Spurs do? I think there's still a lot to figure out once free agency and the trades are done. But I think with a healthy Zion Williamson, you feel good about potentially being in that 5-6 range, and then, you know, see where the chips fall after that.
My one wish: don't be boring. We'll see if they can do that, because
yeah,
that was their biggest
never
sin.
Boring.
Their biggest sin of this last season was boring the second half. So hopefully they can avoid that. But great stuff as always. Will Guillory, check out his work over at The Athletic, over on X at Will Guillory. Thanks so much for the time, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, great stuff. Looking forward to the NBA draft coming up next week. It the NBA Finals is going to end, then we're going to be right into the draft. There is no downtime. It kicks off on Wednesday. It's a 2-day draft now. There will also be Thursday, but as of now, the Pelicans don't have a second-round pick, so we can turn the TV off as of Wednesday unless they make a trade. But all right, I'm Jeff Nowak. He is Cullen Steele behind the glass. We're taking you up till 8 p.m. here on Sports Talk, the Big 870 WWL. Stick around.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Brown. Coming back in on Sports Talk, Jeff Nowak, Cullen Steele taking you up till 8 p.m. We went long in that last segment, so we will be short here. But looking over at the Oakland Hard Jewelers talking text line, we got a text from 7662. LSU fans in Omaha, we are not a fan base. We are an event. We bring the party and the food. And I agree with that. Also, going back to the last hour, you know, something Mike was talking about, Mike D'Antilio was talking about, was like flashbulb moments, you know, and like it's the best way to describe it, because there are certain moments when you're a sports fan that not only do you remember what happened, you remember where you were sitting, you remember what you were snacking on, you remember who was in the room, what you were wearing, who yelled what. Because it was just that big,
yeah.
You know, and obviously the Tracy Porter interception, Tracy Porter going to the Saints Hall of Fame, like that's going to be the answer for a lot of people. But I'm going to ask you to go deeper. If you're listening, hit us up on the Oakland Hard Jewelers Talking text line, 504-260-1870. Tell me what that was for you, because I know what mine was. So I grew up in Connecticut. I was a big Giants fan, and the David Tyree helmet catch. Because I, you know, the Giants won Super Bowls, but I didn't experience them, right? Like, I wasn't around for, you know, the Jeff Hostetler and whatever, like, yeah. Those runs. So that was the first one for me with, like, Eli Manning and the 16-0 Patriots, because I grew up surrounded by Patriots fans, and they were always so rude to me all the time. And it was like,
wonder where they get that from.
16-0, like, 18-0 at that point. Like, they didn't even consider for a second they might lose that game. And it was just so awesome. And I remember, because it was early on in the TiVo era. And, you know, like the boop, 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 boop. remember that sound? Everyone remembers that sound. And so me and my dad, we were delayed. And we didn't even realize that we were watching downstairs. My mom was watching upstairs. And she comes down the stairs and she was like, wow, that was pretty cool. And we were like, what? And she was like, oh no, and she ran away. And then like 30 seconds later, the play happened and we just start losing our minds, and she comes running down. It's like, oh, you saw it. And I'm like, yeah. So she almost spoiled it. But that's the one for me. Like, I will never forget that catch because it was the most insane sports moment I have ever witnessed in real time. And, you know, it's like I can visually see it in my brain as I'm talking about it. And I think everyone has, any sports fan, anyone who's really passionate about sports, you have at least one of those moments.
You have to ask Charlie and Steve when you see them next about the amount of times I have texted them covering an LSU baseball game while they're watching on TV about like, oh my God, what a good home run. And they're like, huh? And I'm like,
oh, because you're watching it in real time and they're streaming.
Because I'm listening, so I've got like a good like minute, 30-second head start. There was a time last night where I said,
oh yeah, when you're listening to it, you're getting it like, yeah, you know,
way
instant,
faster.
Right.
So I remember texting Steve literally last night and I said, oh my God, and then instantly said, sorry, spoilers.
Yeah, no, that was me last night as I was texting Steve, and he must have been watching it on TV, and I was streaming it on my phone, and he would text me like, wow, and I was like, oh, I guess I should pay attention because something weird's going to happen, because I knew he was about 30 seconds ahead of me, and that happened at least 10 times over the final last two innings, because it's like it's easy to forget. The eighth inning was crazy. The ninth inning was crazy, because I think that game's going to be that for a lot of people. Like, that's going to be the type of game that 20 years from now, a bunch of LSU fans are like, oh, you remember that? And you're like, yeah, I remember what I had for lunch that day. And it's just that's the great thing about being a sports fan is like the community around those wild moments. Like, if I ever run into a Giants fan, if I ever need something to talk about, like a helmet catch, like, oh, yeah, the helmet catch. The guy did nothing else the rest of his career, but he did catch the ball on his helmet once with an assist from Rodney Harrison. And the 18-1 Patriots. Never let anyone live that down. But all right, I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Colin Steele. One more quick break, then we're going to close out the hour here on Sports Talk. Keep it locked on WWL. Rolling back in, Jochen Hart, Julie's talking text line. We got, hey guys, when Tracy Porter picked off Brett Favre in the NFC Championship game, yep. And yeah, that's a good one. My favorite note about that is like the reason he made that throw is because they had taken his ankles off his body and he didn't feel comfortable running. Colin, you have one real quick?
I do, yeah. Same game. Later in the game, it's going to be obviously the missed field goal. I was in Alabama with my dad. We were watching it downstairs in the basement, and he ran outside running around in our cul-de-sac. I have never seen him sprint that fast because he was just celebrating them making the field goal, and he was celebrating
more. About the Garrett Hartley field goal.
He was celebrating more of us going to the Super Bowl than he actually did a week later when we won the damn thing.
Yeah, because at the time when you won it, it was less climactic. It wasn't overtime in the NFC Championship is about as elite as it gets.
Like you make it, you're in. Like that's kind of its own win.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. But all right, we're going to take you up till 8 p.m. here on Sports Talk. Next hour, we're going to bring in Stephen Bidek, sports correspondent for the Omaha World Herald, covering Coastal Carolina. This is Sports Talk. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Cullen. Keep it locked on WWL.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.